Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Tazria. This week, Rabbi Elisha Ancelovitz discusses Tazria. Rabbi Ancelovitz is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Elisha Ancelovitz.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Torah reading, Parshat Tazria, introduces laws and norms that seek to address complexities of body, contagious illness, childbirth, parenting, and gender. At the same time, because this parasha addresses these complexities, there is a tendency to escape recognizing these complexities by treating Tazria's laws or norms as symbolic and mysterious. There is a tendency to avoid recognizing that we modern Westerners struggle with these or similar considerations and behaviors. Therefore, in the next few minutes, I will review 1. Some of the details and norms of leprosy and skin diseases found in this parasha. 2. Rabbinic sources that seem to refer to tzaraat as a mysterious disease instead of a natural human phenomenon. And 3. A rabbinic discussion that mentions an extreme case of a failed childbirth. What we will see by reviewing these 3, the biblical laws and rabbinical references to these laws, are that we are dealing with our issues, our fears, and our problems. The majority of our parsha addresses identifying contagious diseases, in contrast to bodily disruptions that disturb healthy humans but are not contagious. The 2 examples that most strike me are, first one, which we would find humorous today in our healthy, long-lived society, is boldness. Vayikra Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Mem. Ve'ish ki maret rosho kereachu tahor hu. If a man loses the hair of his head and becomes bald, he's tahor. He is healthy. Vim mipat panav yimaret rosho gibeachu tahor hu. If he loses the hair on the front part of his head and becomes bald at the forehead, he is healthy. He is tahor. To anyone who remembers the story of Elisha in Melachim Bet Perek Bet, the second book of Kings, chapter 2, the fear of aging and balding is clear. Our parsha, however, reminds us that we are not allowed to displace our fears onto others. Now, we may consider such a reminder outdated, since we are so used to robust, bald people today. However, even today, subconscious discrimination against bald people still exists. Even more so, today, we still similarly often fear wounded or genetically deformed people. My point is that the fear is real and the reminder is necessary. If we do not recognize our own subconscious fears, we do not actually address them, and instead we simply deny our behaviors. So is there a solution? Well, the rabbis suggest that although a deformed person cannot offer the priestly blessings, since his presence is disturbing instead of arousing of respect, as in Mishnah Megillah, Perek Dalet Mishnah Zayin, chapter 4, Mishnah 7, the rabbis say that such a person who is physically, quote-unquote, deformed, may bless the people if the people know him. Tosefta Megillah, Perek Gimel Mishnah Chavtet, Halacha Chavtet, chapter 3, Halacha 29. The rabbis teach us that human connection overcomes biases and fears. But as this parsha reminds us, we have to be aware of our biases and fears. And as the rabbis remind us, if we connect to the real person opposite us, then we can overcome them. The second example is one that many rabbis today teach as a mysterious halakha. Regardless of denomination, it is treated as a metaphysical, outside the boundaries of normal health discourse, halakha or law of tzaraat, and that is also found again in our parsha, and that is about the body, or the person I should say, whose body becomes completely white. The Kohen sees that this person's tzaraat, skin disease, covered his whole flesh. He shall pronounce the affected person clean, tahor, healthy. Person is healthy, for he has turned all white. The supposed mystery here is why a body covered completely by a skin disease becomes considered pure or healthy. The answer, however, is obvious. A person whose whole body turned white is discovered in the end by the spread of the whiteness to have harmless vitiligo, So although a person who has vitiligo, his body appearance is abnormal, it is not contagious. So again, the Torah reminds us that the person is pure. And once again, the reminder is necessary. The person looks abnormal. The person not only looks abnormal, but has an abnormal color that at times would be indicative of a serious disease, of a contagious disease. And so the Torah reminds us, relax. Move beyond the fear. Is there a real problem of contagion? No. If there isn't, treat the person as a person and don't impose fears, my own fears, upon that other person. Now, these reminders, they're critical. They are critical in and of themselves. They remind us how to interact with other people and how to place the boundaries on our own projections, to limit them and not impose them on others. But there's another example that we can draw from. There's another lesson that we can draw from these examples. And that is to overcome facile thought. To overcome our tendency to just impose a surface logic onto reality. A surface logic that allows us to make sense to ourselves as we blithely go about thinking in harmful and destructive ways, relating to others in the world in harmful and destructive ways. I want to illustrate that by referring to a very late midrash, a midrash from the period of Jewish life in Eretz Israel, in Eretz Yisrael, under the harsh early rule, of early Byzantine Christianity. So we'll get to play a little bit with the midrash. It's a midrash or a sermon that attacks Christian assertions of being the new Israel by asserting the divine chosenness of the Jewish Israel. Right? The Byzantine church and government condemned and attempted to end Judaism. And the response was an ideological assertion that Judaism is the true Israel, the true Judaism. This midrash that we're about to discuss uses a metaphor of three legal examples in which superficial logic would indicate an outcome that is patently ridiculous to anyone with real knowledge of the situation. One of the examples is leprosy. So I'll read the midrash in English simply because it is long and we are limited in time. The midrash begins by stating who can produce clean out of unclean? Nobody. A reference to Iyov, to Job, chapter 14, verse 4, Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Dalet. Who can produce clean out of unclean? Such as Avraham from Terach, Chizkiyahu, the righteous king, from Achaz, the wicked king, Mordechai, whom we celebrated recently, from Shimi, and Israel from the nation. So Midrash begins with an assertion about the chosenness of the righteous, including the righteous Israel, as opposed to the Christianity of the time that included people from many nations who claimed to accept the Torah, but rejected all the norms and the laws of the Torah. So we're not going to now go back to that whole ideological debate, but it begins as an assertion of the righteousness and the chosenness of Judaism. Now it gives legal examples as metaphors. Similarly, we learned that although a whitened growth, the size of a gris, a small amount, is impure, a growth that's spread out to a person's entirety is pure. It's Mishnah Nigaim. Who did this? Who commanded this? Who decreed this? Not the singular one of the world, meaning God. Now, this is often read as a mystery statement. This is a mysterious law that only God could have commanded, that if this disease spreads out over the whole body, the person is pure. But as we just mentioned, and as everybody knew at the time, a person whose whole body becomes white is pure because he's healthy. So in a moment, we will see the educational point that this midrash wants to make, the one I mentioned in the beginning, which is to cure us of facile thought. We'll just look at the two more examples. We learned there concerning a woman whose fetus died in her womb. The midwife who extended her hand and touched it is impure for 7 days, while the woman is pure until the fetus emerges. Again, a woman whose fetus dies in her is still pure until the actual miscarriage. And the midwife, however, who touches and discovers that the fetus is dead, becomes impure. It is a situation in which the house is pure when the dead is in it, and impure after the dead is left. Normally, like the house where a dead person is found is obviously impure. We all know the experience of being in a space with a dead person, especially somebody that we are close to, which is usually the case in a house. So the house is impure, and after the dead person has left, we can begin treating the house as pure. We move on. Here, it's the opposite in a sense, as if, right, the house is pure when the dead is in it. The woman is still pure, the mother, but impure once she has given birth to the fetus, the miscarriage. One more example. We learn there, even the clothes of everyone who is involved with burning the cow and dealing with its ashes from beginning to end becomes impurified, referring to what we read last week, Para Aduma, the red heifer. Even though the ashes of the red heifer purify others, anybody involved in making the ashes, burning the cow, and so forth becomes impure. But it itself purifies the impure, but the ashes, they purify. So again, this is read as a mystery. How can the ashes purify and impurify? But in reality, this is another example of facile thought. The Midrash comes along and gives us three examples of facile thought, as I will now explain. First was leprosy. If a person's body becomes completely covered with white, they're actually not contagious. So of course they're pure. The second is the midwife who touches the dead fetus, she becomes impure. But the mother doesn't become impure. Of course the mother doesn't become impure. The trauma will only strike, really strike, the mother when she's miscarried. Then she becomes impure. That makes sense. And the third example is the making of the red heifer. Well, when I throw ashes on a person who hasn't bathed, as we know, during Shiva, and I throw ashes on them with water on the third day, so they have to wash the ashes off, and people begin greeting them and comforting them, which was a practice in the past, to wait till the third day, then of course they begin becoming pure. And on the seventh day, when I do it again, and then they go and bathe, then again they've been moved away from sitting there in sweat and non-bathing and mourning into actually moving into life. So it makes sense that part of the process is, in a sense, getting a person to wash their face by sprinkling them with ash water, dirty water, ash water exfoliant ashes, and the person cleans themselves and becomes pure. So that makes sense. Along with the fact that anybody who burns this animal, one of the few animals burnt with its skin, which is dirty, smoke-filled, and smells of rotting, burning flesh, obviously becomes impure, as does anybody who makes the mixture of ashes that they know is going to be used for somebody else who's encountered death. So all these actually make sense. A leper who might be contagious is impure, discovered not to be contagious, is pure. A woman whose fetus has died, she's still pure. Once she miscarries, then she becomes impure. And the people making the red heifer are impure, but once they've completed making it, when it's used and sprinkled on somebody who's already really impure from death, then that begins the process of that person moving out of their sweat and dirtiness and not caring about their appearance to begin the process of washing a bit on the third day, as in the face, and washing and fully bathing on the seventh, the end of Shiva. So these actually make sense. Midrash, however, brings them as examples in its ideological fight with Christianity to say these are facile examples of Christian claims that Judaism has collapsed and Christianity is a new Israel and Byzantium is winning over the Jews. And so it uses these three examples, which also relate to Jesus, leprosy, the red heifer, whole ideological battle, which I do not want to enter into right now. But in the midst of all this, notice what this Midrash has done. It's used the metaphors of leprosy versus Jesus, as in the stories of Jesus curing leprosy. It's used the metaphor of the red heifer, which also stands in contrast to Jesus, both in the book of John and in other later writings of early church fathers. And it's referenced the issue of pure and impure birth, again an allusion to pure and impure birth in Christianity. But notice what it's done. What the Midrash has done is the Midrash has pointed out that we often look at the world in a facile way. If I don't really care, I just want to impose my logic on the world or my fears on the world, then I look and I say, well, if somebody has leprosy, they're impure. Their whole body becomes covered with leprosy. Of course, they're still impure. If somebody has a dead fetus in her, then she should be impure now. The fact that when she miscarries, she'll have the really negative experience, especially before there were sonograms, well, that's irrelevant. Red heifer, smelly, dirty, burning red heifer with its skin and its ashes, that's supposed to purify? Oh, the fact that it's an exfoliant, the fact that it gets the person to wash his face and begin the process of moving, I ignore that. Why do we ignore in all these three cases? Or why do some people ignore? Because they have a facile position. They have an ideology. They're opposed to Judaism and its practices, or they're, doesn't matter, anything we're opposed to in life. We know how we want life to look. And we look at somebody else and we say, wow, your practices are weird. We look at somebody else and we go, wow, you're just problematic. We look at others and we impose a superficial logic to silence the truth of our own biases, the truth that we have biases, the truth that we have fears. Comes along this Midrash, and it takes examples of Tzarat that we saw in this week's Parsha, and it applies them outside of Tzarat. It applies them to the way we examine and evaluate other people, reality. It says, whoa. It says, pause. It says, look, you can make an argument that sounds logical. But once you recognize the complexities and truth of reality, then you realize it's a false argument. The person who reminds us of our aging and is balding Well, but they don't really have a disease. The person who has a disease, but it's not threatening, life-threatening, and it's not contagious, there is nothing to fear other than our own fears. The practices that I want to impose on others, such as if you, how on earth can you purify somebody with dirty water? Well, it actually makes sense that the ashes can work. In other words, the parsha reminded us to treat others as human beings and to recognize our own fears and not impose them. And the rabbis came along in this late midrash and they reminded us not to impose our own logic in order to silence the other's truths, the other person's insights, the other practices that we wish to deny, again, because of our own fears that our own little rubrics won't make sense, that our own little rubrics won't be absolute truths, that our own ideologies won't be absolutely right. My wish in reading this parsha this week, after Purim, before Pesach, is that we remember the lessons of this parsha, that the only way we ever come to redemption is when we recognize the complexities and therefore the possibilities of life, instead of living in our own little cells, warring cells between each party, caught in a jail cell of its own, but warring against the other. We recognize the complexities, we recognize our own fears, we recognize the superficiality of our logic that we try to impose on others. Then there's hope that we can actually get together, work together, do and experience miracles of actual redemption. Shabbat Shalom. And Chag Kasher V'Sameach.
Thank you, Rabbi Anselvitz. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.